Taylor McPherson sitting in for Evan Bray on this Monday morning. Hope your week is off to an awesome start. All right, this is a topic that I've wanted to do on the show ever since I found out I was going to be hosting these 2 days. Really, really interesting report hit this month from Canada's Competition Bureau. And it's all about airlines and especially foreign investment. Right now, foreign owners can only own up to 49% of a Canadian airline, and essentially a 100% foreign carrier can't operate a domestic airline within Canada. But the report says that it might be a good idea to change that, pointing out, as the Competition Bureau does, that weak competition in the airline industry is a big hurdle when it comes to lowering prices and improving service across the country. And the Competition Bureau especially says that's true in remote communities. Now, I don't know if Saskatchewan counts as remote communities when you're viewing it from Ottawa. Maybe it does or not. But do you think that more competition would actually be a good thing when it comes to air travel in Canada? Probably. But of course, there are some concerns as well. Sovereignty and Canadian control over Canadian air travel is obviously one of the big issues here, as well as national security. What happens if a foreign-owned airline is operating in Canada and Canada has some kind of a spat with that country? But I really don't know where to land on this issue, and that means we have to turn to the experts. Joining us now is James Bogus. He is the CEO of the Regina Airport. James, I've got to ask, what was your first reaction when you saw these stories about the report from the Competition Bureau?
Oh, well, good morning, Taylor.
Good morning.
You know, we, of course, were very interested in seeing the outcome of this report. They actually took the time to also consult with airports in the country. I know it was a very airline-heavy report, about competition, but a couple of years ago, I've been doing this for about 25 years, by the way, but with COVID and all of the things going on, we were watching the price of flights and the lack of airline capacity during that period. And I think the report was very important. But as we read and digested the information, I think you hit it in your intro about this idea of foreign carriers or the idea of foreign carriers operating domestic routes. Be quite a departure from where we are today as Canadians, and certainly would have been something that was a concern in the past, but now the government has relaxed quite a lot of those rules, and you're seeing airlines like Flair or even WestJet recently selling a portion of their own company to allow investment from, in this case, the U.S.
James Bogus is with us, CEO of the Regina Airport, and of course, it's good that national carriers can open themselves up to more foreign investment. Still up to 49% is the limit here. But if we did get rid of that and maybe even allowed foreign carriers to start operating, you know, on domestic routes within Canada, is that something that would result, do you think, in lower prices, improved service? I mean, competition tends to do that. Whenever you increase competition, it tends to obviously make the prices a little more competitive and hopefully improve services as well. Would you see those positive outcomes happening if we relax the rules even further?
There is no doubt that competition is king. However, capacity, which means how many seats an airline will offer a particular route, is really what drives price. Let me give you an example. So today, we have only one carrier operating to Calgary, which is WestJet. I think we all know WestJet's a very dominant carrier here. They've got fares into August and into September at under $100 to go one way. If we had a U.S. carrier who decided to operate that route, the real question is, how much cheaper could a fare get than something like that? Where I'm seeing benefit to having the ability for a foreign carrier to operate is actually on routes to the United States. Let me give you an example. Just recently, the airport, we were successful in attracting our first American carrier back to YQR in almost a decade. Many of the listeners will know we have United Airlines now back flying Denver. And this is a big deal for us. That's the sixth busiest airport in the world right now. It's a huge, huge hub. And the ability for an American carrier to come to a Canadian airport unfettered is critical. But what I think the listeners need to know is if we opened up our skies to American carriers, so this is domestically, we're talking, 100% open up, maybe they could fly Regina to Calgary or other routes. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to. Having the ownership is one component, but these routes have to be profitable. And when you've got Canadian carriers like WestJet or Air Canada already offering fares in some cases at under $100 or $100 to go to a city like Calgary, you're not likely going to see a large quantity of competitors wanting to kill the dollar or chase that dollar down to zero. There's just not a lot of margin left when you consider taxes and fees and other parts of the ticket that aren't even the carrier's price himself.
That's a very good point. James Bogus is with us, CEO of the Regina Airport. And James, you would probably know more about this than I, but the big question reading this report is, you know, even if we did relax the rules, would those foreign airlines want to move in? Is this something that, you know, non-Canadian carriers have been clamoring to do? They're saying, please, please let us run a route between Regina and Calgary. Is there kind of a demand from existing carriers to move into that Canadian space?
Selfishly, as an airport CEO, if I looked at it just from our business, we're talking being the, you know, running an airport authority for our beautiful province. More carriers, the better. More routes, the better. That's a good thing. I think it's good for our business, certainly good for customers. I haven't, in my entire career, spanning, again, almost 25 years, had a foreign carrier look at wanting to fly domestic routes simply because they have their own strategies to fly to their hubs. So, for example, United has a major hub in Denver. Their goal is to get you out of Canada, get into their major American hub, and then connect you with their network. What I think is a real opportunity, though, is to ensure that the Canadian carriers are given an opportunity to get back into routes that they're not currently operating. One of the reasons why there's been a challenge for some cities in Canada, you know, we're very blessed to be number 15 in the country in terms of air traffic. We've got over 1 million passengers a year, 15th busiest airport in Canada, international status. We're very lucky. But if you were calling me and I was the CEO of, let's say, the London, Ontario airport or the Windsor airport, their story is very different. They have not recovered to pre-COVID levels. Their communities do not have the level of competition in air service that we enjoy or Saskatoon Airport enjoys. So for those airports, what's really key is if we could find ways to ensure the Canadian carriers today have an opportunity to serve those routes profitably. And there are strategies, and the document talks about that, to offer incentives that could be supported by the government to have them re-enter these very important smaller markets. And that's what's been a challenge. And that's where you see the really high prices on fares. And that's something that, as a Canadian CEO, I'm very aware of because we talk to our colleagues across Canada and hearing what their stories are in smaller city centers.
Most definitely. And I mean, with such a big and diverse country that we have, it's definitely going to be different stories in different regions in a lot of cases. James, while I've got you, I wanted to talk a little bit about summer travel. You said that the Regina Airport seems to be doing quite well. Have you been busy so far this season? And what are the popular spots?
Well, big thank you to the listeners and to our province. It has been outstanding. You know, coming from, this is my eighth year here at the airport, and, you know, seeing where we were, obviously, in 2019, 2018, and then seeing where we are today. Let me give you some stats. We just got our June numbers about a week and a half ago, and June 2025, we grew 9.6% over the previous year.
Wow.
But the real story is we're up 2.3% from 2019. We have seen record capacity. So this means WestJet specifically offering more flights and more seats into the major Canadian city centers. We've got Calgary, of course, Vancouver, Toronto, and Air Canada as well, bringing large aircraft to our community for both Vancouver and Toronto. What this amounts to, and I'm sure you're on these lists as well, join WestJet or Air Canada's mailing list, you'll see them pumping out seat sale after seat sale. It's made a big difference. We're very pleased so far, but the future, of course, we're looking forward to a busy winter, but this summer has been the best we've had in 5 years.
Oh, that is just fantastic news because, yeah, you mentioned the COVID pandemic and the massive hit that obviously air travel around the world and airports as a result took. So to see recovering it and doing numbers that are significant or 2.5% over 2019, that is just fantastic. Tell me a little bit more, James, while I've got you, about that flight from Regina to Denver. Very exciting to get an American carrier back into the airport operating the route. How has it been performing? Has it been a winner for you?
Well, Taylor, I'm a proud Canadian. I'm sure, like many of the listeners, I'm not happy with what type of news we're hearing from the U.S. But the reality is, I hope these things will obviously pass in time. And certainly we've been marketing to a U.S. airline really ever since I've been CEO. This route is a 50-seat regional jet. So it's a very small aircraft to fill. And we were very strategic about looking for a carrier who could provide that. So this route is operated through United Airlines by a company called SkyWest, the same organization that operated this route about 10 years ago when we had the service. Despite it being a new service, we're seeing average lows, and this means, you know, the seat sales essentially, upwards of 75 and 80%. We've had some really good days where the flight goes out full or nearly full, and then on a slow day it might be 60%. For a two-month-old flight, given the context of what's happened in the U.S., we are delighted. We're also looking forward to growth. We actually had SkyWest out. These are the folks, again, operating the route about a month ago, and they held a business roundtable here in Regina, and they were already talking about the possibility of a second frequency a day in the next 12 months. So we're going to have to see how that materializes, but a big thank you to the community for supporting this. We know how challenging it is right now, thinking about the U.S. and travel to the U.S., but the reality is, too, the Americans are coming up here. These are not flights that are just full of Canadians. There's a lot of U.S. people coming to visit, using our city for business, using our city for conferences and events. And that's a big thanks to, you know, the Hotel Association, the tourism folks, and all of those involved with economic development to help market our city as a place to come to as well. So it's not just for outbound. We got a lot of inbound travel as well.
Oh, that's excellent news. James Bogus is with us from the Regina Airport. James, before I let you go, are there any other new routes in the works or any other plans, something that people should be looking forward to in the coming months or that you're looking forward to?
Certainly. I mean, we are obviously thrilled with having the U.S. service. And again, we hope that things will stabilize down there with trade and, of course, these tariffs. But we're also very focused on Canada. And this year, we saw the advent of a brand new Canadian route that just started June 29th. So in case the listeners are not aware, we now have weekly service to Halifax.
Oh, great. Yes, I've heard about that. That's great.
Yeah, no, it's been great jumping off point to Europe, but also Halifax's destination. Taylor, try running up the hill to the Citadel up there if you want to look that up. It's quite the tourist event there. But anyway, it's great new service with WestJet. We, of course, have our Kelowna flight. We've got Montreal on 3 days a week shared with Saskatoon. And we're also focused on marketing to that third Canadian airline, Porter. We've been talking with them for the better part of 2 years. We're hopeful in the future they'll say yes. I got to tell you, Taylor, put lots of incentives on the table for these folks. We're hoping they'll come and serve a new market here in Regina. But right now, record capacity in some of these routes, two U.S. flights, prices of flights are very aggressive if you're willing to be flexible on your day. So it's a pretty good time to be an airport authority, finally, after 5 years.
That is just fantastic. I love when we can do good news on the show. Thank you so much, James. It's been a pleasure chatting with you. I hope we can do it again soon.
You bet. Have a great day. Thanks so much.
You too. James Bogus, CEO of the Regina Airport Authority. And yeah, that Halifax flight, super exciting. You know, I've never been to the Maritimes. It's one of the only places in Canada that I've never actually visited. And boy, do I love Maritimers. You know, when I worked in hotels, anyone from the Maritimes was my absolute favorite to deal with. So I think I'm going to have to go and visit Halifax at some point, maybe jump on one of those brand new routes and go check it out sometime. Very exciting stuff. Taylor McPherson filling in for Evan Bray right here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Taylor McPherson filling in for Evan Bray on this Monday morning. Speaking of the power of love, or I guess the power of resentment, have you heard about this app called Tea? T-E-A, like the drink. But tea is now slang for like gossip. So the idea is that if you've had a bad experience dating someone, you can essentially post their photo on this app and a little write-up about what it was. Hey, it turns out they were actually a scumbag. Turns out they were lying about this and that. Turns out they had a whole bunch of criminal convictions. Whatever it is. Now, the founder of the app said that it was designed after he witnessed his mom's terrifying experiences, you know, dating men who had criminal records or being quote-unquote catfished. That's when you're deceived by a fake identity. But the app now has been hacked, and thousands of images, including selfies, ended up getting leaked online. this app has been pretty controversial because there's a lot of men who are kind of pushing back against it, you know, saying I was posted on this app. It's just someone lying about me. It's a disgruntled person that I went on like two dates with. And now they're just slamming me online. So you do have some recourse if you end up posted on this app. I mean, you can obviously sue someone for posting false or defamatory information. You can't sue the app itself because, at least in the States, Congress passed some legislation protecting websites and apps from liability for things that were posted by their users. But apparently all the people who were trying to post on there, because of safety concerns and things like that, now all of their stuff has been leaked online. It's what a tangled web that we weave. You know what part of the problem is? It's so hard to date these days. It's very rarely are people dating based on an introduction between two friends. You know, hey, I think you should meet my friend. They're also single. It's a great guy. I've known that person for years. Great gal, whoever it is. Here's some background on them. Yes, I know that they're not shady or they're not a scumbag. With the prevalence of dating apps, and full disclosure, I do use them. It's, you kind of have to in 2025 if you're single, but you really do kind of take a flyer on the person. There's nothing on Tinder or Hinge or Bumble or whatever dating app you're using that's actually going to say, yes, we've checked and verified that everything this person says is correct. I mean, I could post photos of myself on a big yacht and say, hey, check out my giant yacht that I own. I totally own this giant yacht. And you can really be kind of deceptive in that way. I mean, you can be deceptive in lots of big and small ways in really any case online, but it's very true for dating apps. And so I kind of have a rule with dating app dates, and it's a two-part rule. The first date will be somewhere nice and public where there's lots of other people around, and that should assuage safety concerns. As the man in these things, too, I kind of understand that not a lot of women are super comfortable. Say you meet someone on a dating app. Oh, yeah, just come over to my place for dinner. Here's the address. That you could end up in some sketchy situations pretty quickly as a result of that. The other kind of part of the rule that I have is you just go for a drink with the person on the first date if you met them on a dating app. Just go for a drink or, you know, something real quick. So then if it turns out that, hey, I think this person was a little bit shady, the pictures were clearly someone else, whatever it may be, it gives you that opportunity to, you know, you have your drink. Oh, okay, thanks. It was great meeting you. It's only 20 minutes out of my life. The night is still ahead. You can kind of move on. But yeah, it's bad enough, the deceptiveness that you're seeing in these dating apps, that there are now apps trying to kind of independently verify this. There are some Facebook groups as well. A friend of mine is on that Are We Dating the Same Guy Facebook group because there's enough serial philanderers out there that women are actually taking things into their own hands. It's an interesting and funny world we live in, but I guess the answer is to let your friends introduce you to other single people and just try to avoid online dating or anything online in general. Taylor McPherson filling in for Evan Bray. Writer-reporter Britton Gray is with us next to break down that game against the Elks. This is 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. McPherson filling in for Evan Bray on this Monday morning. Well, your Saskatchewan Roughriders pulled it off, defeated the Edmonton Elks 21-18 in front of just shy of 28,000 people at Mosaic Stadium on Friday night, improving their record to 6-1 in this 2025 CFL season, now holding the top spot in the West Division. Joining us to break down some of the action from Friday's game is our writer-reporter, Britton Gray. Good morning, Britton. Before we get too deep into it, I've got to know, did we hear those Cody chants for former Saskatchewan quarterback Cody Fajardo?
No, not really out there. No, as I mentioned before, Cody didn't really leave on bad terms. It was the team who elected to move on, not so much him. So not really as much bad blood between him and Rider fans as there was with Henry Burris. But still a loud crowd, still out there. I will say the people started doing the wave while the Riders were on offense. That does not help. You got to do that when the other team's on offense and try to communicate.
The fans got to be part of the team here. Britton Gray, our Rider reporter. Well, Britton, it came down to a bit of a nail-biting finish. Started looking like a bit of a blowout, but you must have been on the edge of your seat during that fourth quarter.
Yeah, that's kind of been how the Riders have played this year. They often have times where they go out and get a big lead and allow teams to kind of just come back and never really put a team away. And that's a bit of a concern right now for the Riders. You want them to be able to get a big lead and kind of maintain it, because once you start facing these more veteran teams, the other teams like the Stamps, the Bombers, and Montreal this upcoming weekend here, you need to put a team away. Otherwise, they're going to find a way to win, and we'll see if they can improve on that. It was exciting to watch, but it's just becoming a bit of a pattern that this team has to get rid of in terms of how they've been playing this year.
That's a good point. And yeah, whenever you're playing a team that you're way stronger than on paper, it's just so important to really never give them an inch, because it seemed like the Elks really got some hope going and got some optimism, you know, thought we can actually do this in the fourth quarter. So what do you think factored into that kind of shaky ending for the Riders, Britton?
Just a lack of execution out there. When the offense was out there, it was a lot of two and outs, and you can't have that when you're trying to put a team away. You have to execute, put together a drive with at least a couple first downs to just eat away at the clock and maybe put up some more points to really just put an end to it there. So you need that. And then for the Elks, that was a desperate team. They're desperate for a win. They're 1-5 now. You knew that if they were just given a chance to be in it late, that they would just be able to kind of find that extra gear, because desperate teams can do things like that. We saw that the Toronto Argonauts were a desperate team, and they went out and easily handled the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. And that's sometimes just how it happens in the CFL. But at the end of the day, the Riders did hold on to win. They did make that play to kind of clinch the game, and they're the top team in the CFL right now. So you're happy with that. But once again, when especially against a team like the Elks, a team, as you mentioned, you should be able to beat fairly easily. You want to hold on to that lead and really not even have them in the game at the end of the fourth quarter.
It's another case of a win for the Riders, but when you talk to the team and the coaching staff afterwards, they didn't seem really happy with it. You're not the only one who's noticed that trend of, you know, struggling to close out these games. What were the Riders and the coaches saying about the game afterwards?
Yeah, Trevor Harris said he was unhappy with how the offense played at the end of the game, and that's why I mentioned that. This team knows they have to finish it off. Now, like I said, they're never going to apologize for a win. A win's a win. Doesn't matter if you win by 21 or 1. It just counts for one win in the standings. But they want to play better. They know that. Exactly what I mentioned. If you do that against veteran teams, a team like the Stamps right now, Winnipeg, they will come back. They will complete that comeback. And as some fans I heard on the post-game show there, they're saying, thank goodness they played Edmonton this week. Otherwise, it might have been a loss, right? So the team knows that they have to find a way to finish games. It's how do you do it? Well, what is leading to it? Is it emotional letdown, mental lapses, the physicality? They're not exactly sure what needs to change, but I know that that's something they've been talking about, how they can put teams away finally this year.
Right. A reporter, Britton Gray, joins us on this Monday morning. Obviously, a win is a win is always good. Let's talk about some of the other bright spots on this Rider team. 8 sacks was mentioned even in your headline, in your story afterwards. That's got to feel pretty good for the defense.
Yeah, absolutely. Micah Johnson afterwards said it felt really good that the team finally got rewarded with some sacks. Sacks are a weird stat where sometimes, even though the defensive line is getting the pressure, it doesn't necessarily lead to a sack. But pressure is still good. This defensive line likes causing chaos. But it was good that this team, I guess, was finally rewarded with some of those things that you really notice on the stat sheet, which are the sacks. It's what kind of kept Cody Fajardo off his rhythm for most of the game, and it's something this team really needs. They don't blitz a whole lot, so you need your defensive line to kind of just get there with 3-4 man pressures, and they are finally able to do that against Edmonton. Now, it's going to be tough to get 8 sacks every game, but hey, one game of doing it, that helps build some confidence for this group.
Fantastic, and it's got to make some of the other quarterbacks around the league a little bit nervous heading up against the Riders in future games. Britton, Trevor Harris was saying pretty clearly, this team needs to get better at closing things out if they want to win a Grey Cup this year, and obviously, across Rider Nation, the sights are sky high this year. I think there's almost an expectation that the team will at least play in the Grey Cup, but do you think Trevor Harris is right that they need to make some adjustments, particularly to closing things out?
Yeah, I do, especially when it comes to the playoffs. Those are teams that obviously deserve to be in playoffs, and they're tough to put away. And so, as I've already mentioned, if you're facing Winnipeg in the playoffs, if you get up to a 21-point lead somehow, some way, you better hold on, because that is a team that knows exactly what it takes to win, what it takes to get to a Grey Cup, and they will find a way to claw back. You need to put teams away when you have that opportunity. Now, as I also mentioned, players noted that, hey, sometimes you just need to win by 1 point here and there. Or Corey Mace said he lost Grey Cups to teams that were around 500 when they had the better record by far. So you never know come playoffs. But being able to put ways that teams away, in my opinion, is the mark of a championship caliber team, especially against the lower teams in the league.
Britton Gray, Rider reporter, joins us breaking down the Rider game against the Edmonton Elks, which was probably closer than a lot of people in Rider Nation would have liked. Okay, Britton, penalties have been a thorn in this team's side, even for the last couple of seasons, this one included. Were there any dumb penalties on Friday, or were the Riders maybe a little bit more disciplined in the matchup against the Elks?
A little bit more disciplined by the Riders. Nothing really jumps out as a dumb penalty. Tavon Campbell tried to jump over Cody Fajardo when Cody went to slide. He did hit him with his hip. It was unintentional, but that's a penalty. That's a roughing the passer penalty as the Elks are coming back that you really don't want to take, but the game goes so fast. Any hit to the head on a quarterback is going to be called, and I know that was kind of a penalty that drew the ire of a lot of fans because they disagreed with it, but ultimately, he did hit him in the head. He didn't mean to. He did try to avoid it. But you want to keep quarterbacks healthy, especially right now when a lot of quarterbacks have missed at least one game this year in the CFL. And so keeping them healthy. But outside of that, I thought it was a fairly well-disciplined game by the Riders this time around. And we'll see if they can kind of continue that trend.
That'll definitely make head coach Corey Mace pretty happy. He has been so frustrated with some of the penalties that this team has been taking. Okay, Britton, Saskatchewan now heading to Montreal on Saturday to take on the Alouettes. How's your confidence level heading into this game and in the rest of the season in general?
I still have very confident in the Riders. I still have them in the Grey Cup. I think this is a championship caliber team, but that road trip to Montreal, always a tough one. I talked to Jamarcus Hardrick, who of course is a Grey Cup champion in this league, a veteran, and he said he's never had an easy road trip out there. That is a tough place to play. I have confidence in the Riders this week because Montreal, that was another desperate team without Davis Alexander. That's why I think that really helped them beat the Calgary Stampeders. Of course, Vernon Adams Jr. also gets injured in that game. I think if VA finishes that game, the Stamps probably beat Montreal. But Montreal coming off a win, I like the Riders' chances of going there to get a win just because Mikal Bethel-Thompson, he looks better, but not as great as we know he can be. I don't think he finds that groove against Saskatchewan. I think for the first time in maybe a while, the Riders actually head out to Montreal and come away with a win.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Britton. I always appreciate you joining the show with your analysis. Thanks again, man.
Not a problem.
Writer, reporter Britton Gray breaking it all down for us on this Monday morning. I'm Taylor McPherson, sitting in for Evan Bray. When we come back, I'll let you know who our top prognosticator was in green and white prognostications on Friday. Stick around, 650 CKOM, 980 CJME. Taylor McPherson filling in for Evan Bray, and the saga of this Christian singer, Sean Foyt, just continues to not go away. This is the guy who, you know, he's a hardline conservative Christian. He's espoused some anti-gay views. He's very opposed to a bunch of COVID pandemic measures. I don't know why people are still banging the drum about that years after the fact. He's a hardline Christian guy, and he's been associated with the MAGA movement in the States. He's called President Trump like God's chosen one and stuff like that. I don't agree with his views. I don't listen to his music, but I don't have a problem if he plays a concert somewhere. And I wish I could say the same about other Canadians, but it seems like everywhere this guy's trying to find space just gets shut down. So ultimately on Friday evening, after we talked about him on Friday's show, an evangelical church in Montreal did allow Sean Foyt to perform. It was a very hastily scheduled concert, and now they're facing a fine. Oh, and during the concert, some of the protesters, and it comes back down to your freedom of speech. I have no problem if you protest his concert, as long as you're not throwing smoke bombs into a church while he's trying to sing on stage, which is exactly what happened in Montreal. So I hope that whatever piece of garbage was throwing smoke bombs into a church ends up spending a couple of nights in jail over it. But I was just shocked by the reaction from the city of Montreal. Now, they did fine the church to the tune of $2,500 for really organizing a concert without permission. Okay, I can get that. You want to hold a big event in a city. You do need the permit in place, whatever it is. But then Montreal Mayor Valerie Plante comes out and criticizes the church even further. She says, this show runs counter to the values of inclusion, solidarity, and respect that are championed in Montreal. Freedom of expression is one of our fundamental values, but hateful and discriminatory speech is not acceptable in Montreal. So toe the line or get out of the city, I guess is the message that the mayor is sharing here. And no, that doesn't have anything to do with freedom of expression. If you want to defend freedom of expression, you have to find someone you disagree with and defend their views. It is very easy to defend the views of the people who are saying things that you like and things that you agree with and things that you're nodding along to. Those people don't need free speech. It's the people who are getting shut down that you should be defending if you actually care about free speech and freedom of expression. Now, lest this be interpreted as me praising this Christian singer, Sean Foyt, I'm not. And in fact, he kind of stepped in it himself over the weekend as well. The Kawartha First Nations in Ontario reached out to him after learning that six of his concert venues had canceled. And they said, we'd like you to come and lead a prayer service for us. That's awesome. At their First Nations Treasure Island Resort, which is probably not as glamorous as they made it seem, because apparently Foyt and some of his entourage showed up, took one look at the accommodation that he was being offered and said, thanks, but no thanks. So about 4 hours before he was set to lead this prayer service, he ends up canceling on them. So it's not that all of his Canadian concert and performance venues are shutting down. He's shutting them down too. And the First Nation's not that happy with them either. The deputy chief said, you know, even if the accommodations weren't the Taj Mahal, we believe worship is about humility and not about comfort. Sean's road manager, he says, said that all they wanted was a place to lay their heads and shower after sleeping on the bus for the last few days, and we delivered exactly that. So he's kind of become famous because all of his shows have been canceled in Canada, and it sort of comes back to that. Well, I've described it as the Streisand effect, but it's also kind of the mosquito bite effect as well. You get a mosquito bite on your foot ever? That's happened to me all the time. And you just scratch the absolute heck out of it because it's annoying and you just can't stand to sit there and do nothing. But when you scratch the heck out of a mosquito bite, it only makes it worse. Now suddenly you're bleeding through your sock and it actually hurts and you've got a scab, when if you had just left it alone, it would have gone away on its own. This is one of those cases where I think it's very clear that the pushback and the resistance and the rush to shut this guy down has added to his fame and is sort of creating this mystique around him. By the way, I don't recommend his music. I listen to a little bit on YouTube. It's not very good. I don't agree with his views. But I don't have any problem, like I said, if he wants to perform concerts in Canada. And if people want to come and see him paying money or not, that's totally up to them. And if other people want to protest, again, in a way that is not disruptive, that is not shouting over them with megaphones, or in this case, throwing smoke bombs into churches, my goodness, what? Who raised these people? But if you want to go out and protest that because you don't like his views, that's fine too. But it backfired so hard on everybody who was shutting down all of these venues. I would not be talking about him on the radio if it wasn't for Parks Canada, the City of Montreal, and all these other organizations that decided to get all high and mighty and not allow him to come and share his message with the people who actually want to hear it. It's like a mosquito bite. You just ignore it. It'll be annoying for a little while, and then it will go away. And you'll never have to worry about it ever again. But alas, that just does not seem to be the political climate in which we live. I'm Taylor McPherson, filling in for Evan Bray. This was a wild story out of BC, and a guy punched a cougar in the face when he was attacked hiking about 1,000 kilometers northwest of Vancouver. He was working near Lake Catherine. The cougar approached him and actually took a swipe at him. It must have had like cubs nearby or something like that, because normally they leave people alone. But ultimately, this guy, Rocky Balboa that he is, decks the cougar in the face. It backs off and then it disengaged. He suffered some injuries, but didn't even need to go to the hospital. It's about as good of an ending to a cougar attack on a human as you can possibly hope for. Lots more still ahead on the Evan Bray Show. Don't go anywhere. This is 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.